We only eat to kill hunger before it kills us.
Ramadan this year will be different for the people of Gaza. For them, it will stand out in memory. Sure, they've lived through 15 wars, but nothing like this. They said to us, they've never suffered like this. They've never seen death like this. After more than 30,000 people have been killed, and with at least 8,000 people under rubble, most of Gaza's 2.2 million person population is displaced, and people are literally dying of hunger, eating grass, eating animal fodder, anything they can get their hands on. Before the war began on October 7, Gazans needed 500 trucks of aid every day. These days, less than 10 of them go through sometimes, as needs have been compounded 100 times over. In other parts of the world, Muslims observing Ramadan begin stocking their fridges up weeks before the beginning of the month of fasting. Back in Gaza, people are saying they've already been fasting for the past 5 months, living on one meal a day, saying Ramadan is an excuse to give their children on why there's no food and an opportunity to teach them the virtue of patience. This is Beyond the Headlines, and I'm your host, Nada Al-Tahir. In this week's episode, mere days before Ramadan, we speak to Gazans in makeshift tents instead of warm homes, and why some are happy that the month has arrived. We also speak to Steve Sozeby, founder of Heal Palestine on the humanitarian crisis plaguing Gaza and lack of access to food and shelter there. In Gaza, starvation has become a perpetual state of existence. More than 20 people have died as a result of malnutrition, another word for lack of food. Those are just the ones we know of, the people who have died in hospitals. The Ministry of Health believes many are silently dying at home, on the streets, in tents, or wherever they are. Even if the food does exist, it's mostly canned. People are getting physically sick of eating canned beans and meat, if they can even get their hands on it. Others are making bread, but in the absence of flour, they're using animal fodder instead. It tastes like cardboard. It tastes like air, they say. It does nothing to quell their hunger. It does nothing to silence the screams of starving kids. 17-year-old Lamar Abu Hashim has forgotten what real food tastes like. She spoke to us from Rafah.
Eating these days is like stuffing your stomach with paper. Completely pointless. And I guess fasting this month would be super deadly. Actually, now we started forgetting about actual food that we used to eat in normal days. We'd say that we used to eat meat, rice and soup, and multiple kinds of sweets and desserts that could never be compared to the miserable stuff we're eating these days.
What her life was like before the war has also become a distant memory, she says. The cherished traditions of Ramadan and its joyful gatherings have been crushed by the reality of loss and hardship in the wake of the war and its brutal, life-changing impacts on Lamar and her family. Lamar remembers her former life during Ramadan with despair.
During Ramadan, we used to have a gathering every Friday to eat breakfast together. Well, surely the first day was always my grandfather's. He used to put us this huge banquet to eat our breakfast together. And after that, men would go to prayers and the kids and the children would go and play on this big garden we had.
She isn't hopeful life will be back to normal again.
Our current situation cannot be improved in 1,000 years. We lost our houses, we lost our mental health. Everything seems wrong these days.
And how could she look to the future when everything she knew has been decimated? Yet despite all that she has been through and is still going through, she finds reasons to be thankful, especially that her family is still alive.
I'm surely grateful that I have my close family members around me and that none of my family members is gone till now. And I'm grateful that God is numbing us these days so we can deal with these hard days.
Celine Mana was a 21-year-old architecture student at the Islamic University. She was a student there because the university was destroyed on October 11. Celine's own home was destroyed within the first week of the war. She and her family packed up their things and headed south to Rafah. But they couldn't even stay together. This year, Celine's family table will be missing a few key members of their household.
One of the things that we do in Ramadan is decorating the house. We buy decorations and spend all day preparing and having fun. It's like Christmas for Muslims. So that we can't do. And the most breaking heart thing this year, we can't have family gathering because we are all separated. My grandparents, aunts, uncles, and cousins are still in Gaza, so Ramadan wouldn't be the same. Maybe if they were here, we could have some traditional Ramadan activities. Even if the war is still going, at least we have each other. We can make something out of nothing.
And this drastic, tragic upending of her life has made her miss the little things, the things we take for granted.
But sometimes I still hope that the world will end and we will go back home, settling in and having our boring routine that we all miss. Missed my room, missed my privacy, missed my friends, missed my relatives, missed everything that I have, and now I appreciate it more than ever because little things you don't think about until you lose it, ahead of the holy month.
Like Lamar, Celine is grateful that her family is still alive. And yes, it's gotten to that point. So let's talk about food access. What's being done to feed the people of Gaza? And is it that food is simply not available or that it's just at ridiculously high and unaffordable prices? We spoke to Steve Sozeby, whose initiative Heal Palestine is distributing food to the people who need it the most.
We've hit the ground running, and we have teams on the ground who are distributing food to thousands of children every day from local markets. So one thing that is available, if your team is working hard and if they're dedicated to finding the resources, is that food is available in the local market, not in large quantities. And it's not easily accessible, and it's expensive. That's why people are going without food. That's why people are starving. It's in short supply. It's expensive. People don't have money. The need doesn't meet the demand. But if you're able to purchase and take, for example, the support that people give you and translate that into purchasing in the local market food, and then you have a team who's willing to prepare that food and distribute it, you can feed people.
I asked Steve about the challenges his team and residents on the ground are facing every day, especially during Ramadan. His answer was quite simple and very telling.
Well, the challenge is first and foremost is for people to stay alive. There are no safe spaces in Gaza. The entire area is under constant threat of bombardment, and it's a real existential threat to every single person in Gaza simply to stay alive. It's really indescribable. I think it underscores the challenges that we face from a humanitarian point of view to just implement basic core relief efforts. Starving children need food. That food is being prevented by individuals who I cannot understand or explain the motivation or how one would justify a hungry child being denied food, but that's what's happening.
What Ghazans are dealing with cannot be compartmentalized. It's not just the loss of shelter or one family member or one limb or one child or one home. For some people, it's everything all at once. Let's remember that in Gaza, medics have coined a new acronym, WCNSF, that stands for Wounded Child, No Surviving Family, because there are just that many of them. Here's Steve again.
They themselves have lost family members. They themselves have suffered unimaginable tragedies that none of us could properly comprehend unless you experience it yourself. The kind of fear and loss and discomfort and agony and pain and sadness and depression and even hopelessness. This is what they go through every day, and yet every day they wake up and continue to live and try to help each other and to survive. So for generations, and just being able to keep their humanity, I think, is the biggest accomplishment in this terrible crisis and this continued dehumanization that they've had to endure. And obviously they're now in this existential crisis of survival, in which it's unprecedented in modern history to see a population being brutalized and unable to escape. What happened in Iraq? What happened in Syria? What's happened in Ukraine? As terrible as those conflicts are, and many others, not just those people could flee to a safe space. It's terrible, and I'm not trying to diminish the suffering of our brothers and sisters in Syria and Iraq and Ukraine. They've all gone through unimaginable suffering. But ultimately, if you drive far enough or if you flee far enough, you can escape. In Gaza, they are walled in and there is no safe space. There's no place that's off limits. Hospitals have been bombed. Schools have been bombed. Churches and mosques have been bombed. Apartment buildings, tents, every area that you would think it's clearly designated for civilian use has been bombed. And therefore, this is a much different kind of aggression that the Gaza people are experiencing than anyone else in modern time.
There are talks of a truce throughout the 4 weeks of Ramadan. And yes, that may very well happen no matter how last minute. But even if all the guns in Gaza go silent this very moment, the colossal scale of destruction to life, to property, to infrastructure, to mental health, is nothing that can be healed anytime soon. This episode of Beyond the Headlines was produced by Mona Farag, Nagam Mohanna, Dua Farid, and audio engineered by Aaron Mayers. And I've been your host, Nadal Tahir. For more on this and other deep dives, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and head to thenationalnews.com.